for over 25 years, he has thrilled fans young and old inside of the squared circle. Now, he rocks the hottest events across the Midwest for DJ Sound Solution. In this podcast, he will take you behind the curtain, behind all the smoke and mirrors. You're listening to Behind the Lights with Troy Miller.
What is going on, everybody? It's your boy, DJ Troy, and I'm back again with another episode of Behind the Lights podcast. Just a few weeks ago, I said, hey, let's bring some guests on the show. You know, my wife said I'm boring to listen to. She said I needed a little something. I kind of ran out of topics. I always have a lot to talk about, but just coming up with topics, you know, is kind of tough. And I'm thinking, I know a lot of people, so let's just bring some people on. Last week had Jason Carpenter, the owner of DJ Sound Solution, on. He gave great insight to what we do. And today I got a special treat for each and every one of you, because I'm going to go back to the time before I was a DJ, when I was a wrestler. I have a lot of people that want to know a lot about the wrestling business and what goes on in it and around it. And I'm just the person to bring the guys on to give you that info. Today, the roles are a little reversed, because usually this guy's asking me questions. This time, I get to ask questions to my good friend, Sign Guy, from all the way in Seattle, Washington. Sign Guy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Troy. I've been looking forward to being on Behind the Lights for a while. I'm glad you started having guests, and I hope I didn't beg you too much to be one of them.
No, man, no. It's always good to talk to you anytime that I can. Let me see. I've known you for, I don't know, man. It's been several years. I've been coming on your show and doing interviews and plugging the matches, and man, people just do not realize what an asset somebody like you are to the professional wrestling business. You are all the way across the country from me, yet you still promote local shows in Indiana. You promote local shows across the whole United States. You plug the local independent guy who's trying to get their name out. You bring them on, you give them a platform, and it's just something that I always look forward to, and something that I think a lot of people take for granted, or they just don't know just what it actually is that you do and what you bring to the sport. And I personally, from the bottom of my heart, want to thank you for everything that you do. But let's go back a little farther. Just, you know, getting started in wrestling. People know you as the guy that does interviews, but man, behind the scenes, you do it all. What piqued your interest in the sport, and what got you, how'd you get your foot in the door? Because I mean, all these years that I've known you, I don't think I've actually heard how you got into the wrestling business. I think people want to know that, Sign Guy.
Sure. What got me hooked on pro wrestling initially, I'd watched a little bit, but when they did the angle in the UWF with Eddie Gilbert being the number one heel and running roughshod while his father was the senior referee and trying to restrain his son, that hooked me. And when Tommy Gilbert resigned over the actions of his son because he thought it was a conflict of interest and he felt the need to move on, I just felt so bad for Tommy Gilbert. I had to watch every week to see what the resolution was. And I felt really bad. I wanted to buy him dinner to try to cheer him up, which eventually I did like 20 years later. But that's what initially got me hooked on the sport, was the Gilberts in the old Universal Wrestling Federation. My start came when I was more or less just facing the crowd. I'd bring the sign that would usually be attached to a cookie sheet or a pizza pan or something. Sometimes I'd slip and fall and the sign would go flying into the hand of the Dice Man, Ronnie Vegas, who would slip and fall and repeatedly hit the guy in the head with the sign by accident, I'm sure. But that was kind of how I got started. Dice and Jerry Wilson and Bobo Brazil Jr. kind of saw something in me. To this day, I'm not sure what, but they incorporated me into the business and kind of brought me along really on their own. They brought me into the business. It wasn't something that I consciously said, hey, could you do this? They just saw I could help them and kind of be an asset, apparently, and they eased me into it. And I got more and more formally used as time went on until I was pretty much formally in the business.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, I don't know if I'm even familiar with this. Are your roots and ties here to Indiana or Seattle or Canada? I mean, where did, like, I know you lived here for a while. I don't know if you grew up here, if you grew up in Seattle, if how did you come to Indiana and what led you to go back, and just the ties that you have here. You know, I've always wondered how you made that connection.
I was born in Indiana, grew up there. When I got married, my wife was living up here in Seattle, so we based in Seattle for a while, and then we moved back to Indiana for about a year and a half or so, and then had a great offer to come back to Seattle, so we took the offer. But we were kind of established in the wrestling scene there in that year and a half in Indiana. That's when they started kind of bringing me into the business a little bit and using me. So we would go back and visit, and I'd do shows and stuff when we were out there visiting. And that's kind of what led to everything. But I had ties, like you said, back and forth. The Canada thing was more or less kind of what I was doing as a gimmick in wrestling for HPW, and it caught on, and a lot of people in the state of Indiana apparently do not like Canada or Canadians, as I found out over the years.
very true. But yeah, like, even like you got your start here in Indiana. When you went to Seattle, how was it like breaking into the wrestling scene there? Because you're heavily involved in the state of Washington with all the inner workings of professional wrestling. How did you get in with those guys in Seattle? I mean, that's a big mecca, big time. I mean, in the 90s, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, Pacific Northwest professional wrestling was where you wanted to be at. When I was graduating high school, had aspirations to become a professional wrestler, I wanted to go out there. That's where I wanted to be. That's where I wanted to break in. How'd you get your ties and all that stuff in out there?
In Washington, how I got in was there was a promotion called Suquamish Championship Wrestling, which is outside of Seattle. And I was going to those shows. We had started Turnbuckle Turmoil at that point. So the people on that show that ran it were familiar with me from that. I had done work in the wrestling business, obviously, and Lila Lodge and Dash Venture told them that they should be using me. They went to bat for me. So when I went to a show one day, the promoter, as I'm walking through the door, said, "You just got booked. You need to go grab your gear." So I made a U-turn, went back, grabbed my gear, which I always have with me. If you see me at a show, I'll have it. Came back in and was in a battle royal that night. And I was with that company pretty much through the rest of its run. It's sort of still around. They went a rebranding, and they affiliated with a different affiliate organization. So they're sort of still around, but not in the same place that they were before. And of course, I branched out. I've been on several promotions that are within the state of Washington. One of them currently still running. They're the only show running live shows in the Pacific Northwest at this point in time. But hopefully that'll change in the next few weeks.
Good deal. I got a buddy that DJs out there in Washington. And, I mean, just like with the wrestling business, the entertainment business as a whole is just brutal out there. Trying to survive, you know, and make ends meet. And just being able to just do what you love to do. It's really been tough with COVID and stuff like that. But I'm glad that, you know, states are loosening up a little bit and at least letting people get back to some sort of normalcy. And just, you know, it seems like it's been forever since anybody's been able to, you know, enjoy themselves to the full extent, like going to a show or a wedding or any kind of, you know, function where people gather.
It's been a year, and Washington was hit particularly hard by COVID. So we're behind most other places. We hit phase 3 statewide on Monday, which is by far the farthest we've been along in the city of Seattle since it hit. Seattle has been behind the rest of the area in Washington quite a bit, where the surrounding counties are several steps ahead of us. Seattle is still way below that, but our governor declared statewide phase 3 on Monday. So we don't know if it will hold very long, but we're going to give it a shot, and hopefully it will stick and we'll be that much closer to phase 4, which is total normalcy with no restrictions.
Well, good deal. I mean, that's what we like to hear. With the vaccine rolling out pretty much for almost everybody now, and just, you know, COVID as a whole, it's kind of like almost, I mean, you just don't hear, at least not here, you don't hear of anybody that has it anymore. It's kind of just like almost disappeared. So hopefully things are getting better. It has taken a toll on the whole world. It's just been, you know, some parts of the country have been worse than the others. And just hopefully things get back to normal here pretty soon for everybody. Speaking of Seattle, it's like the coffee capital of the United States, pretty much. You're a big coffee aficionado. What is your go-to cup of Joe?
Are we talking within Seattle, or are we talking cup of Joe in general?
In general.
In general, I recently came across Demon and Bunny Coffee, which is the coffee that Rosemary from Impact Wrestling and the Bunny from All Elite Wrestling have teamed up to make. It is absolutely delicious. I can't recommend it enough. Absolutely fantastic coffee. I've had a couple, 3 bags of it since the past few months. Highly recommend Demon and Bunny. There's also a great company based out of Orlando called Carlin Brothers. They do a podcast and YouTube videos about movies and television, but they also are known for their coffee and tea, and they have a really good coffee as well, so I definitely recommend that. And if you're up here visiting in the Seattle area, Starbucks has a great coffee. Everyone's familiar with them, but they started right here in Seattle. They still have the very first store at Pike Place Market, which is the only non-local store allowed at Pike Place. They were grandfathered into it, so you can find them. And there's also a ton of great independent coffee places that are fantastic. So Seattle, and you are only here for a few days, I would recommend hitting up some of our local coffee shops, of which they are abundant.
I can imagine. Speaking of Seattle as well, there's something else that's pretty famous for us. That's the Seattle chocolate. Now, that's something that me and the missus have been very fortunate to have a connection out there, because you, every once in a while, you know, you and your missus send us a little goodie bag this way, and there's always some tasty Seattle chocolate in there. And every once in a while, Missy Liz will give me a little nibble off of hers. But man, I got to tell you, that's some of the best chocolate I think I've ever had.
It is a delicious chocolate. It is a woman-owned company. They're a local independent company. They crank out a lot of great chocolate. You can find their candy bars online. They have a website, and they will deliver it straight to your door if you want, or you can send it to someone else's door. or you can go to a great many stores here in the greater Pacific Northwest region and find it. It's in pretty much every grocery store, drug store, convenience store. You can find at least a few of the varieties. Do you have a particular favorite Seattle chocolate candy?
I mean, dude, you've sent us a few that are just out of this world. I think the last one we got was like, it had like an orange something. It was, can't quite pick up the name of it, but man, it was good.
That was a seasonal one. Yeah. Yeah. That one is good. They have a lot of seasonal varieties that they introduce. It's usually from like October until February-ish that they have the seasonal ones out in the stores.
Yeah. Good deal, man. Good deal. Now let's get back to wrestling, shall we? There's a podcast out there. It's called Turnbuckle Turmoil. I think you may have heard of it. But what got you to start something like that? And I'm very grateful. Me as one, you know, one guy right here. I'm very grateful for you just investing in talent. Because in this business, professional wrestling, it's all about me. And you make it all about everybody else. What got you thinking and your gears turning that, hey, man, we could do something right here and we can help out the little guy? How'd that all start?
It all started without me, as a matter of fact. There was a guy up here by the name of J.D. Vokes. And his buddy pal, QT Vokes, whom you might be familiar, they would go to some of the local independent shows. And QT was getting a little rambunctious, a little too involved there in the shows on occasion.
I don't believe that. I don't believe
it. It was starting to happen. So in order to save his buddy pal's life, J.D. Vokes decided, why don't we start a podcast about Pacific Northwest Wrestling, and maybe you can talk to some of the wrestlers. He thought that might calm him down a bit. So they started Turnbuckle Turmoil, and that was in January of 2010. They were interviewing a lot of the local guys, and they slowly branched out to interviewing people from around the country. And they asked me to be on the show in June to talk about what I had done in the business. And before I ever got the opportunity to do the interview, they approached me and asked me to be part of the team. I thought it over for a bit and decided I would give it a shot. And I've been on ever since. So that was June of 2010. We celebrated 11 years this past January. We added some hosts over the years. Dimitri was like a week behind me in joining. He's been very, very instrumental in the success of the show. He runs the Turnbuckle Turmoil Facebook page. He adds the pictures and artwork to the show descriptions on the links. Helps us find guests sometimes. Randy Zellers joined us about a year ago. He is a local Pacific Northwest wrestler. He has joined us. JB Moonshine also, who's just the other day celebrated his one-year anniversary with the show. He also has wrestled all over the Pacific Northwest. He joined us. He's brought a lot to the table as well. So we've been going fairly strong. We've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people from all over the United States and Canada. And we've just been very, very fortunate that we've had a lot of success like we have.
Yeah, I think I'm one of the very few Turnbuckle Turmoil Hall of Fame members. I think I do hold the record still of the person who's been the guest the most times. I've lost count on, I mean, maybe you could tell me, but I mean, it's been 8 or 9 times, I know at least, that I've been a guest on the show. But I think this last time that I was on was very interesting. It was a very interesting topic. You had guys that either were in the music industry and got into wrestling, or were in the wrestling industry and got into music, and how them two just coincide and flow, and it's pretty much just like the same business. That was very interesting. Very interesting to me. I enjoyed it thoroughly. All the guys on there were great. Just want to thank you again for just allowing me that platform to come on and share my stories. I mean, out of all the people you've had on there, give me something, one of the like wildest or craziest guests, the craziest moment maybe out of all them years that you probably had on.
Oh, that's going to be tough because QT Vokes is our co-host. I don't know about wildness. I mean, we've had a few. I will go with Brittany Brown, who is a veteran female competitor out of the Boston area, and QT Vokes booked her. One of the few bookings that he handled, and he didn't know what time our show started. He gave her three or four times to call in. She finally contacted me. I told her, she said, "Could I give QT a piece of my mind when we come on the air?" I said, "Absolutely, go for it after all you've been through." There were some sailors out there blushing by the time she got through about 5 minutes into the show. Well, that was pretty wild. The thing that surprised me the most, it happened this last Sunday, so just our most recent show, we had Gorgeous Michelle Starr, who's wrestled all over the world. He started in the late 80s. He was the ring attendant in the WWF. He would set the ring up. He would do some ring announcing for them on occasion. He's been around countless years. He's been going to the CAC for over 15 years. I found out he had never once in his life played cribbage. I was absolutely floored with someone from his background and experience in the business never having played cribbage.
Wow. That is kind of amazing. Especially, you know, back in the 80s, that's what all the guys did.
Absolutely. I figured he would have had to been sitting there when a game broke out at some point, but apparently he never did.
Wow. So you've not been arrested. I mean, you've done several jobs as far as, you know, you've been a manager, you've been a referee several times. You've gotten involved in the action. You've had wrestling matches, but some of your injuries have taken place, and crazy injuries at that. You about got your eyeball poked out
multiple times. Yes.
You about lost your eyesight there. You got bad knees, so much so that a few of the people, you know, around, we created the club called the Bad Knees Club. Because, you know, after so long in this business, you're bound to have bad knees. And then there was a time where you actually dented a concrete floor with your body.
Yes, I did.
More so your head. Run us through that. That's probably the worst injury that you've sustained in your whole career. We thought we were going to lose you when me and the missus heard that you were in serious condition. We both dropped what we were doing. We rushed down to the hospital, not knowing what kind of shape we were going to find you in. And there you look like you're hooked up to every machine. Your head was wrapped up. You looked like you were in a coma, but you still had your sense of humor, and everything was okay. You ended up pulling through, and everything turned out okay. Run us through that whole story, because it's really incredible.
That was at a charity event, HPW's anniversary show. They usually paired with the local Columbus, Indiana Fire Department to raise money and to get donations of toys for the cheer fund. The previous year, the firemen were involved in a six-man tag. I worked with them in that six-man tag. Everything went perfectly smooth. There were no problems. The next year, they decided to enter the firemen into the battle royal that was going to open the show. The firemen wanted to take part. We didn't see any problem with that. I volunteered to be the last out because I thought being the smallest guy there would be the safest thing to do for everyone involved. I went to a rookie wrestler here in the Pacific Northwest named Gregor Petrov, and I ran him through the concept, and he came up with a great idea of teaching the firemen things they could do that were fireman-based, so fireman carries, double axe handles, and for the elimination, he suggested they raise me like a tarp that people would jump into if they're escaping a tall building that was on fire. I thought that was perfect. The body weight would be distributed evenly. They'd be able to hoist me up. I could drop to my feet nice and safe. So when we're working with the firemen prior to that, we're teaching them all these things. The first time they tried it, they were going to hook me in the ropes by accident. And I stopped everything, explained I would probably break my neck if they were to hook me in the ropes and I didn't have control of my own fall. So we went through it again. We did it 7 or 8 times, perfectly successful, not an issue. Get into the match, and one of the firemen got a little superstaritis because things had gone so well previously. He felt confident, got overconfident. First thing he did after the other firemen had done some things successfully was when I fed up my leg for him to start hoisting me up like I had shown them, he grabbed me by my arm and forced me up unwillingly, which separated my shoulder. So I says to myself, self, we're going to have words when we get backstage over that. He said, I don't want to have words. How about this instead? They lifted me up like a team lifting up the coach after the big win, which was not how I had instructed them, but I still felt relatively safe. Because my body weight wasn't distributed, I was a little bit heavy for each of them. And so by the time they got to the ropes, I dropped about 2 inches, which was enough to trap my foot in the rope. I had no control over going out on my own at that point because I was trapped. They thought I was selling when I kept trying to tell them I'm caught in the rope, bring me back in the middle, don't throw me. So they launched me harder to break me through it. So I went flying about 12 feet up. I went out about 4 or 5 feet, took the most perfect face bump in the history of the professional wrestling industry, which saved my life. But because I was so high up and had so much force, it did dent the floor. I thought the boys were making a funny ha-ha when they would say I damaged the floor. But when we went back to the building, there was an actual dent in the floor where I had hit. So it was an actual thing that had happened. I was out for probably 4 minutes or so. The referees realized there was something wrong. The ring announcer who announced I was eliminated felt really bad about the announcement, but he was doing his job, so there was never hard feelings there. A lot of the wrestlers realized something was wrong. The firemen finally did. Once I woke up, I was ready to go to the next segment because I had more stuff on that show to do, but I was outvoted, of course, and my night was done at the HPW Arena that night, despite me having more things to do. It looked really, really, really bad. It terrified a lot of people, apparently, but everything healed on its own. Over time, I was fine. No lasting injuries or anything like that. No side effects from it. So everything luckily healed on its own. But I still have to apologize to Hacksaw Duggan every time I see him for scaring him. And Tracy Smothers was shaken up by that for the rest of his days. Anytime I ever saw Tracy after that, he just went on and on about how he thought they'd kill me that night. But
I think everybody thought that was the whole consensus, that Sign Guy was dead. I mean, even when we got to the hospital, you looked like you were on your deathbed. And the thing that sticks out in my mind the most was the thing you were upset about the most was when they put you in the ambulance and they cut your suit off of you. And instead of just taking your suit off of you, they cut your suit. So you know, your sign guy, Superman's spandex outfit. They cut it up in efforts to save your life, and that was the thing you were.
I'm still upset to that about. Day. It was actually in the Lifeline helicopter. I'm in this helicopter, and there's three nurses in there, and one of them says, "We need to get this outfit off of you. Do you want us to roll it off or cut it off?" I said, "Roll it off." And she said, "Roll it off or cut it off?" I said, "Roll it off." She said, "Roll it or cut it?" I said, "Roll it off." All of a sudden, these big scissors come out. I look out the window, and I'm thinking, wow, we're awfully high up, but I survived it once tonight. I can probably do it again. And I passed out, and when I woke up, I asked Mrs. Sungai, how bad is it? And she said, you have a concussion, a contusion, a subdermal hematoma, shattered orbital socket, multiple skull fractures. I said, no, not that. How bad is my gear? Can we save my gear?
Well, I tell you what, we are so thankful that you did pull through. And we can laugh about it now. I tell you, at the time, we wasn't laughing. It was very serious, and we're just all thankful that you did come through with flying colors because, oh.
I apologize for scaring you, but to be fair, you scared me before our Heroes and Legends one time, too.
We all know this isn't ballet. We know what we signed up for. People just, you know, you never expect anything to go wrong. We're all professionals, but accidents and things like that do happen. You're just, you know, you're not prepared, but you're mentally, you're prepared, but you just don't ever think that it's going to happen to you. And when things go wrong, you know, it's just bad news for everybody involved. We're just glad that you're okay and you're back doing.
Yeah, I mean, it was just an accident. The firemen didn't mean to do it. It was mainly one out of the three of them got a little over anxious and overconfident. He didn't mean to do it wrong. It was just in the heat of the moment. It wasn't the promoter's fault because it was my idea. Can't blame the promoter when I insist, hey, I'm going to do this. I've got it. We drew it up safely. They had done it safely several times in a row in the afternoon before the show. It was just one of those things. They felt bad. Chris Lowe felt bad for saying I was eliminated when it looked like I was dead, but I didn't hold any grudge against anybody for even a second. It was just one of those things. Floor is permanently dented, but I was totally healed. I actually climbed back in a ring technically 6 days after that, because I just wanted to get back in. So WCWO, if they let me step in and then step out, Basher did not let me work that night. Technically, I was back to work 8 days after said bump on the floor, because I signed the sheet in Kentucky saying I had done that show, but I never left the dressing room that night. But technically, I had worked 8 days after.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, hey, we're going to give you this moment here just to plug all your stuff and let everybody know where they
can. You can find me on the Book of Faces. There is a fan site. Look up Sungai and you can find me there. My personal page is full right now at the maximum 5,000. But you can always go there, and if room opens up, I could add you. Facebook.com/SignG1. That's the numeral one. Over at the @SignGuyHBW. Same.
Can they follow you literally?
They don't want to follow me literally because that is creepy. You can find me at the YouTubes, and that is TheSignGuy77. Have a weekly a barely tolerable web show up there you can watch. There's a lot of matches up there, some interviews up there. So find me there. Also, Blog Talk Radio, if you look up Turnbuckle Turmoil, you will find us. We go Friday afternoon and Sunday afternoon. Thousands of shows at this point up there, including several with Turnbuckle Turmoil Hall of Fame member and member of Team Bad Knees, Troy Miller. So you can search out those. And we just inducted a brand new entry into the Hall of Fame at Turnbuckle Turmoil. Your fellow Team Bad Knees member, Casey Carlisle, is the 2021 Hall of Fame member.
Good deal. Well, fine, guys. Always a pleasure to talk to you. In a profession full of a lot of bad people, you are definitely one of the good ones. You're like a lighthouse, you know, up on a hill for all of us to see. So thank you for what you do again. We all appreciate you very much. And, man, it was great.
Pleasure was all mine, absolutely. Thank you for having me on here again. Hopefully our paths will cross in the not-too-distant future. Maybe we'll be at the same wedding at some point in time.
You never know. You never know. He is.
I am. I just got my minister license renewed, so I am able to perform all of your needs as far as weddings, funerals, and baptisms go.
Great. Great. Well, again, thank you, Sign Guy, for coming on. And, guys, there you have it. Sign Guy all the way out in Seattle, Washington. Man, what another great guest. I will catch you all next time. Be sure to listen to Behind the Lights podcast. I'll catch you. Thanks so much for listening to Behind the Lights podcast. To check out my links, head on over to the Instagram account at Troy Miller DJ. In the bio, you'll find links to every place that you need to be. If you liked what you heard today, please hit that subscribe button, follow along, leave a comment or a review. It definitely helps out my algorithm and gets the word out. All right, guys, hope you enjoyed it today. I'll catch you all next time. Peace!